talk about.
Okay.
We'll talk about things. Gox.
We talk about stuff. Welcome to Movie the Podcast. That's right. Movie the Podcast. We are on our chain link adventure, whatever the hell we're calling this thing.
I like
it. And this week we watched my pick based on Rebecca De Mornay. We watched the least erotic thriller I've ever seen, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, a movie
Is this
that
meant
I remember
to be erotic.
So it's so
it kind of feels like it is sold that way.
I have cool memories as a kid, like remembering like the fucking advertisements. I thought it was like a Basic Instinct or Sleeping with the Enemy.
I should have watched the trailer before.
It like desperately wants to be Fatal Attraction, but it never really gets there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it wants to be an erotic thriller, and it ain't. It is.
It is sexless.
The entire movie.
It puts the in erotic.
Yeah.
And we'll get into it, I'm sure, but Lloyd Braun's performance is just so weird. He's like doe-eyed and doesn't like everything shocks that man. Like I've never seen a character like
my man before. Is nonplussed.
It's also like they couldn't get Hart Bochner to play that part. Was he too old?
Who is Hart? I don't know who that is.
The guy, fucking Bobby Hans, that guy from fucking
Hans
Bobby. Yeah, that would have been better. Also, the only opportunity you're ever going to get to see of a greenhouse murdering a person.
Okay, we're going to get into that, but would that kill you? I don't know if that would
If enough heavy glass fell from 10 feet above onto you,
yeah.
I would imagine it could puncture enough of you to fuck you up.
I guess. Anyway.
I would have thought Julianne Moore was made of stronger stuff.
Looked great in this movie, by the way.
Oh, my God.
We'll get into it.
Yeah, Julianne Moore.
Did Sean say Sean was like, how did you describe her? You're like, primetime Julianne?
Oh, no. I said, you can't, like, how is it? We'll talk about all my problems with the way specifically he's written in this movie. But you got a fucking first edition Julianne Moore and Rebecca De Mornay at the absolute height of her powers. Like, and can't convince me otherwise with that. She's the only one with a haircut that transcends the era in the entire movie.
Oh my God. Rebecca, thank you for bringing it up. Rebecca De Mornay's haircut in this movie, like, I don't mean to sound like, you know, I don't mean to sound like a queer or nothing, but her haircut is like distractingly horrible. Like, I don't know what's going on with her bangs. Like, they bother me so much. I'm like, what the fuck is going on with her hair?
I'll take her fucking Letters to Cleo haircut over Annabella Ciora's Majestrix Lalandra haircut. Yeah. Whatever the fuck she's got going on.
This is prime De Mornay. This is like Natasha Kinstrich in Species. Like this is
Homelander. Like it was perfect. Every detail was perfect.
Anyway, we'll get into it. We have a lot to talk about, but first and foremost, what did you all watch this week?
Also, no Alec. So just
no Alec. Just being Alec quiet is you know, I don't know, doing Alec things, whacking off. I don't know what Alec does in his spare time. I assume whack off at some point. But I do think Alec is a listener when he's not on the show. I think he's not like you guys.
Why?
You only want to listen.
Long time listener, sometime participant.
I only
listen to the episodes when I'm not on that somebody replaces me like Anthony or Nate or Matt. Cody.
I actually like when I miss the show because then I listen to the show. If I'm on the show, I don't want to listen to my own self talk. I hear that.
I don't listen in full stop end of statement. I'm here or not.
Gogs, what did you watch this week?
I actually didn't watch anything, but I want to put a quick plug in.
Okay.
I am playing Avowed. And
I'm liking that so far.
Really enjoying it. So that's been taking up whatever little free time I have.
Shout out to Obsidian, you magnificent bastards. You've almost made perfect games, but never quite got there.
They got two games coming out. Well, two games this year, Avowed, and then they got Outer Worlds 2, which I'm looking forward to.
Did anybody ever play Penitent or whatever that one game they made was?
No, I didn't know what that is.
No, it was on Game Pass. It was some weird. Anyway, moving on.
But it's so far really enjoying it. It's got big Outer Worlds vibes. A game I enjoyed, but I also never beat. So after. But I feel like I'm actually some momentum. But it's really hard for me to beat games nowadays. I feel like this one's actually got enough momentum behind me to see it through to the end. So I'm excited about that.
It's based on some property I've never heard of.
It's based on Pillars of Eternity, which is
what is that? I don't even know what that is.
It's one of their CRPGs.
It's an isometric RPG, very similar to
Is it Planescape Torment?
Hold on. Planescape Torment, yes, I love that game. It was awesome.
Is that related to this somehow? Is that the same people or no?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, hold on. But yes, because I'm pretty sure Planescape Torment was made by Black Isle Studios, and Black Isle Studios turned into Obsidian. Right. That's why it's Black Island Obsidian. I get it.
Like every 5 years or so, I try to play Alpha Protocol because I still have it, and it just like I just can't do it.
Yeah, that's a game that like I always hear like it's a game you probably missed, and it's worth playing. I've never played it. I hear it's got a lot of great ideas. It's just kind of rough around the edges.
Possibly janky. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Kyle.
So Pillars of Eternity was like. Why can't I think? What was the game that Larian made before they made Baldur's Gate 3? The two.
Divinity. Divinity Original. Like
Divinity Europe. So it's very similar to those games. So it takes place in that same world. It's a game that is on my Steam library that I think I probably bought for like a nickel and never played.
Divinity? I have both Divinity.
No. Pillars of Eternity. Like, I think I have Pillars of Eternity. Because one of my nerd friends recommended it. But.
Right.
Thus far, it's got really fun mechanics from a combat perspective, and I don't know. I'm enjoying. I like building a character, and right now the plot is like I'm genuinely interested in the plot, so I'm going to see this thing. I think I'm going to see this thing through. I think it's got enough oomph behind it. But other than
just briefly before you stop. How is the combat? I was a little iffy on it.
I think it's great. It's action RPG, so it's not like. In some ways I'd probably say it's most akin to a Mass Effect or like where you are actively doing stuff, but you can go into a wheel that will kind of pause time and you can give commands.
Kind of like Dragon Age like that. Yeah.
You can go and do like, you can like use a potion or do this, cast a spell, or you can command your companion to do an attack. But everything else actually maps really nice to the controller, like to do whatever. There's a variety, like you can do silly shit. Like I've got a sword in my left hand and a gun in my right, like a flintlock pistol.
I like
that. But then you can carry two, like Diablo, you can carry two weapon sets at any time. So you can like hot swap it. And then I've got like a spell book tome and a wand. Like you can mix and match stuff. It's very pretty. It's very colorful. The voice acting so far is good. So.
But
it's on Game Pass, so it don't cost nothing.
Is it woke?
It might be woke, but right now, you know what? I'm good with that. Like, if woke just means you give a shit about other people, then I am woke. So
we are the wokest podcast out there. Just let it be known. If you're not woke, don't tune into the show.
But don't worry, we will objectify women later. So
absolutely. We're not that woke. Yeah, calm down on that.
But no, that's it. I meant to finish Civil War. I still haven't had a chance to do that yet. I've been watching. I've also been watching a lot of Workaholics again because I need like a comfort show. And then so Workaholics still great. I've been rewatching Bob's Burgers like with my kids. Still great. And then Liz needs something to like get her over the hump with all the nonsense going on. So she started Reno 911 from the beginning. Not yet, but you know, we'll see. I'm brim rooting for her. I worked on her profile the other day. No slides. But when she started Reno 911 again from the beginning, and I've been like enjoying that with her. Like, well, why? Man, that show was just
so good, so good.
But anyway, no additional films for Gogs.
All right, pass the mic, Mark.
Show.
I didn't watch any movies either because movies are bullshit. I watched.
True.
There's a show on Apple TV called Bad Sisters. It's about five Irish sisters trying to kill their brother-in-law. And he's like, fuck, it's fun. He's like fucking Castro. They just can't. They try to kill him in all these like spectacularly goofy ways. It's not bad, but I mean, it's like anything else that revolves around, because you know he's dead at the beginning of the show, so it's got that problem where it's got to work backwards for like 15 episodes, and it gets a little long in the tooth in parts, but I enjoyed it. Yeah. Gog's, the reason you didn't finish Civil War yet upon your third viewing or whatever is because the movie's not very good, and I'll stand by that.
Well, I don't know, but I'm waiting to get to the end to confirm that it's not very good, but I'm just trying to...
The ending is the only part of the movie that's, like, even remotely good, and even that I feel like is kind of stupid.
And that's where I'm at right now, so you think.
Yeah. But
I'm sitting here with a half an hour left. Like, I saw the Jesse Plemons bit, and I was like, oh, pretty good. But underused, underused Jesse Plemons.
Dogs, watch Kinds of Kindness sometime. You'll get your fill of Jesse Plemons. He's really good in that.
Oh yeah,
and it's Yorgos Lanthimos, but I think it's more approachable. I think right
is we no
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 it's not at all. It's least approachable.
Maybe his weirdest film. Like, but it, you know what I will say, it's approachable in the sense that most of it is kind of, it's funny. It's very funny. Well, I mean, there's a couple parts that aren't funny at all, but. The parts that are fun, like, I can't spoil it, but there's one scene that's, like, I still think about that's just fucking hysterical. Sean, it might be Emma Stone's best videotape scene.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big fan. Love that movie.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, where... I will go see... I will.
And you can watch it in parts because it's three vignettes. You can watch one of them, go dick around, do whatever.
Yeah, they're three movies that basically don't have anything to do with each other.
Love dicking around. My favorite.
The same cast, all playing different characters in all three vignettes.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yeah. But I
love that for me.
TJ.
I watched the three things.
Three things.
One is like incredibly brief. I watched this documentary on Dee Dee Ramone called Hello is Dee Dee Home. I just randomly got recommended to me on YouTube. It's really good. It's less a documentary and more just like a long form interview with him. I don't know. I find Dee Dee Ramone like fascinating. Cause like he's like a scumbag, but he seems like genuinely like sweet, and he's just kind of stupid. And I don't know. It's really good. I really liked it.
I feel like it's apropos for me to mention again, if I haven't, that I thought those guys were all legitimate brothers.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
Wait, they're not?
No, they were just friends. They all like grew up around the same area in New York.
Aww.
But my favorite part of the movie is, so the story behind this documentary is that they were making the filmmaker was making a documentary about Johnny Thunders, Born to Lose, if anybody knows that song. I'm sure Sean knows that song.
Punk.
Yeah, yeah. Guys, you probably heard that song before. Born to Lose, baby, I was born to lose. That's Johnny Thunders. But he was making a documentary about Johnny Thunders, and Johnny Thunders and Dee Dee were friends, and I think Dee Dee was actually in, I think he was actually in Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers, like, at live shows and stuff sometimes. But anyway, I guess the footage that they got of Dee Dee was, like, so interesting, they just made a whole documentary of the footage that they got of Dee Dee. But... I don't know a ton about Johnny Thunders, but there's a part where they show some of his album covers. They're talking about him. And he has an album that's called So Lonely. And the picture of the album, it is so fucking funny. It's just him sitting in a chair with his head down in an empty apartment. Like, I don't know. It's very like 70s out. Like, it looked like a record you'd like flip past in the album store.
It's called. I know what you're talking about. The album is called So Alone.
So Alone. So Alone.
And it, dogs, it looks like a Bonnie Raitt mid 80s album cover. Let me see if I can find it,
bro. It's so fucking funny. Anyway, it's really good. It's only an hour long. Just look it up on YouTube. I thought it was really good. I watched two regular films. What do you want to hear about first? The one I absolutely hated or the one that I really liked?
Anybody? Let's hear the one you liked, because I want to hear the one. I like you finished with disappointment.
Split decision.
Go with Gogs.
All right. The one I really liked is I watched Companion, a movie I think we talked about briefly on the show a little bit. Stars Sophie Thatcher and what's his name? I always forget his name. Huey from The Boys. Jack Quaid. Yeah, Jack Quaid.
Right.
So I think we talked about it on the show, but we're like, oh, it's a robot movie. Well, and that's because they, in the poster, they kind of show something up with Sophie Thatcher. And I think in some of the trailers, they actually explicitly say she's a robot. I don't know why they made that decision, because in the film, it's not baseline that you know she's a robot right away. Like, they build to it, and it's a good twist. And it kind of, like, I'm not saying it ruined the movie, like, because it didn't. I think the movie's very good. But, like, I wish I didn't know that, because when it happens, like, I don't think the filmmakers definitely intended on it to be a reveal, because the way, the way it's brought up in the movie, it's like, oh, shit. And it's great, but it's a wonderful movie. I think that it's a really good kind of, if you like Ex Machina, if you like kind of, like, it reminded me a little bit of, like, Her, the Spike Jonze movie. Like, it's a movie that's kind of, like, ultimately kind of about, like, male entitlement and kind of incel culture. But it also is about, like, the things that we all love about stuff like Blade Runner, where it deals with, like, what is it to be, like, conscious and alive, and, like, what does that really mean? And I just am a sucker for that kind of story. Like, I always gravitate towards that in science fiction. And I think, like, at the end of the day, it's a really cleverly written, like, sci-fi movie. And it's weird because it wasn't marketed that way. It was marketed more like a horror movie. It's not really a horror movie, like, at all. And I thought all the characters were fleshed out really well. I thought in the beginning, some of the dialogue, I was like, uh-oh, it's going to be like that kind of movie. But I thought that it was funny. I thought that it had a lot of tension. I thought the characters were all really well fleshed out. I really, really enjoyed it. I think it's a really solid movie. Highly recommended. I think all of you guys will love it. I think Sean especially, because me and him have a very, very copacetic opinion on, like, sci-fi tropes that we like, and I feel like this is, like, right in our wheelhouse.
Yeah, and Nate co-signed it too, so I think I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sorry for saying that she's a robot for any of you that didn't know, but again, it's all in the marketing, and I don't know why they did that, but it's really good. I highly recommend it. I really, really enjoyed it, and I think Sophie Thatcher is fantastic. I'm a big fan of her. And she, like, carries the movie. I mean, the movie is basically just her. Like, she's on screen, you know, 90% of the time. And if her performance is bad, the movie would tank. And she does a great job. She brings a lot of emotion to the character. And I really, really liked it. Like, it's a movie I could definitely see myself rewatching very soon, because I thought it was really, really good. Also, Jack Quaid is very good at playing the guy that you think is, like, sweet and kind of innocent, and then, like, flipping a dime and being, like, a fucking entitled scumbag. Like, he's very good in this movie. Like, I think he's kind of quietly becoming a very good actor. Like, I mean, I really liked him in The Boys, and in this, he's excellent. So, and also, I appreciate him for recognizing the fact that he's a Nepo baby and being like, yeah, that's why I'm an actor now. Like, there was that article in the New York Times, like, last year, and everybody was upset about it. And he's like, no, I understand that I've gotten advantages that normal people don't get. He's like, what am I supposed to do? Not take them? Like, he's like, I recognize my privilege. He's like, I'm like, yeah, good for you. Anyway, yeah. And he's a good actor. So, you know, I mean, it's not like he sucks. He's not like fucking M. Night Shyamalan's daughter, who's horrendous.
I guess he was really lobbying to play Superman and he didn't get it.
That would have been terrible. I'm sorry. I don't see that at all. I just can't. I can't. He is very tall, I guess. I guess they could pull it off. I mean, if
tall does not a Superman make.
Yeah, but, like, if you really look at, like, Christopher Reeves, like, he wasn't, like, particularly, like, built or anything.
He had a chin for it, though. He had the fucking jawline.
He skipped leg day a lot.
Hey.
Okay, now let's move on to. It's got to be, I mean, obviously we're just starting 2025, but this has got to be my most disappointing film of the year. If it's not, I'll be shocked. I saw Oz Perkins' new film, The Monkey, and it's one of the worst pieces of shit I've ever seen. Like, it's fucking horrendous. It is a comedy written by a guy that doesn't understand comedy, like, whatsoever. And y'all know me. You know what I do. I love Oz Perkins. Like, I'm a huge Oz Perkins booster. I've been crowing about his movies for years. It pains me to say it, but, like, I'm going to, you know, I'll call a spade a spade. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I hated this movie. Like, it is poorly written. It is not funny. Go ahead, Sean.
Did you just not get it?
Yeah, no, no. This movie is like at the is on the intellectual level of like Family Guy. Like, it is not hard to get. And the thing is that's frustrating about it is like he can't help but shoot a movie that looks good. Like, the movie looks great. And it's just, it's so like, I don't know if either one of you are familiar with the story it's based on, but the story it's based on is very short. Like, it's like 6 or 7 pages. It's from Monkey Shines, I believe. Might be Skeleton Crew. I don't remember.
Skeleton Crew.
It's a very short story. Literally, it's just about this guy who feels like his life is cursed. And every time something wrong happens, there's one of those little drummer monkeys around, right? It's very simple. And then, like, he goes to, like, throw it in the lake or something at the end of the story. But then he, like, sees it, like, still behind him or something like that. That's it. There's not much to it. And what they decided to do with this is turn this into, like, this slapstick, like, violent comedy. And it's just, it's so painfully not funny. And the problem is most of the kills, like, they're like cutaway jokes. They're like Family Guy jokes. They're like, oh, 5 people died. Like, this guy got his head stuck in a blender, and it's just like stuck in a blender. This, you know, Cheryl got fucking trampled by horses, and they cut to the tramp. It's like, there's no like buildup to the kills. So it's not fun. Like, I'm thinking about like Saw 5. Like, remember Saw 5 where they're in that garage and like everybody, that guy's like glued to the chair and they show random bullshit.
Oh, like that guy? You mean lead singer of Linkin Park?
Yeah, R.I.P. But he didn't die in the movie. He died in real life. Or he did die in the movie, but not from the movie. But yeah. What I'm saying is that movie is not like a cinematic masterpiece, but it establishes all the stakes in the scene, right? And it builds your anticipation because you're like, oh shit, like what's going to happen? And this movie doesn't do that at all. And it could have been much better and it could have been much funnier. And then like by the end of the movie, it's about these two brothers who are twins. And the twin brother like becomes like the evil twin brother and turns into like a supervillain at the end of the movie. And it's just like, what the fuck am I watching? And at one point, the brother goes back to their hometown and he has control of the monkey. So he's just like letting that thing go and killing people left and right in their town. And it's like, oh, like 30 people died in this small town. And at one point, there's like a cheerleading squad. They never reference this or explain this in any way, but there's like a cheerleading squad when they bring out a body and they're like, yay. And I guess they're trying to say that it's become like, it's like cultish thing where people are like expecting the goofy kills, which would have been fine. It's a fun idea, but you need to flesh it out a little bit because they just show up and that in one scene. And then it literally just sets up an end gag where they get killed at the end of the movie. It's like, what is this fucking movie? It was bad. Like, bad, bad, bad. I it was awful.
Bad. Shout out to Monkey Shines though. That movie rules.
Yeah, that's a great movie. But this movie is awful. The lead actor is really bad. I don't know who this guy is, but like he is terrible. Like, let me explain one. I'll give you one scenario of a joke in this movie. So this guy is like in his 30s and he's working at a grocery store. And isn't that hilarious, right? Like he's a, you know, an adult man working at a grocery store. He goes to his boss, who is like a child, and he's in like an ill-fitting suit and he's vaping. And like, that's the joke. And the boss keeps saying, oh, that sucks. Oh, that sucks. Oh, that's the joke. That's it.
That's the joke.
And it's like, okay, yeah, it's hilarious. His boss is like 10 years younger than him and he's wearing a suit. Like,
the funniest part was that guy worked for fucking the Department of Defense 2 weeks ago. And now he's working at Publix.
Dude, it's just, it's so bad. I was so let down. I mean, I like I said, I love Oz Perkins. I will watch whatever he comes out with next, but please, dear God, stay away from comedies. As soon as I heard it was a horror comedy, I was like, uh-oh. Because, like, that is a very, very tight rope to walk. You know what I mean? Like, there's
yeah, very there's, like, few... 4 good horror comedies.
Well, and I think, like, when I think of, like, horror comedies, I think of ones that are, like, unintentionally funny, like Chopping Mall.
Oh.
Like, that's to me, that's a horror comedy, but it's not.
Yeah, I was thinking of, like, Psycho Goreman. Like, that's a very hard movie to make.
Psycho Goreman.
Would you consider Tucker, Dale vs. Evil?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's a horror comedy. That's hilarious. Also, that guy has a new movie coming out called Clown in a Cornfield. It looks pretty good. The trailer.
The premise of Tucker versus Dale is just like inherently funny on its own.
Yeah. It is so good.
But I mean, that's like, that's it, right? Like, you got that. You got Shaun of the Dead. What's another one? What's another good horror? Like,
not, I guess, Repo the Genetic Opera.
God, no. But Army of Darkness.
It's a comedy?
Maybe. Like, Army of Darkness is funny.
Evil Dead 2?
Evil Dead 2 is it's still kind of serious in a way.
Yeah.
There's funny parts to it.
The fact that we're scraping so hard to come up with it tells you.
I can't even think. Like, Monster Squad?
You know what?
Sisters movies?
Yeah, those are pretty funny.
I liked Werewolves Within. I thought that was good.
I never saw that. You talked about that on the show. I never watched that.
Oh, fucking, what's the Taika Waititi, fuck.
Oh, What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, but it's not really a horror movie. Horror. Yeah.
No, it's a straight, that's a comedy with, like, horror trappings. Yeah. I mean, yeah,
Werewolves Within is probably more like that.
I can't even think of, like, any, that's why it's, like, it's such a, just stay away. Stay away from it completely. Anyway, let's get into
the stuff.
Hand that rocks
the stuff.
My wiener.
Mm.
The stuff. Yeah, the stuff is funny. I think, is Street Trash a horror comedy? I don't know. I even
the
feel
original,
like that,
not the remake.
I mean, the remake is not good.
I feel like that goes into, like, again, I don't think the people that made Street Trash thought it was funny. Like, they, you know, the comedy comes from them being earnest about it.
When I think of, like, horror comedies that really don't work, it always makes me think of Hobo with a Shotgun. Oh, like, I guess Planet Terror.
Yeah. What about Tire? Was it Tire, Tread, Wheel?
Oh, no, no.
Oh, I never saw that.
Don't Rubber? You dare badmouth Rubber. No, Rubber is fucking genius.
I like that, Rubber.
That's by the fucking smoking causes coughing guy. That guy's fucking
that movie fucking rules. Anyway, let's talk about a movie that doesn't fucking rule.
Oh, real quick before we move on, I started watching Severance and I like it. So sorry, cancel.
Everyone
me now.
Just
cancel me all you want. That. I'm four episodes in and I really like it.
Start watching.
Why are people getting canceled over it?
Severance. I started watch. I enjoy it.
Yeah, and the first season's great. The second season, your mileage.
Also that. That redhead is very attractive. Yeah. So,
did anybody watch Andor? I never watched it, but I heard good things.
Anthony said it was really good, but I'm Star Wars free. I'm not going back. I refuse. I'm happier without Star Wars. I feel like a recovering alcoholic. I'm like, you've got me. I'm not going back.
Hmm.
I hate Star Wars now, though they are firing Kathleen Kennedy apparently. So now I guess it'll be good. Who knows? Probably not. all right. Gogs, what happened in Hand That Rocks the Cradle? You know what they should have made? Hand That Rocks the Cradle to the Grave.
Hey, hell yeah. They should have made a popcorn bucket where it's just the cradle in the hand.
God. Okay, this movie is...
Dune 2 is pretty good.
Yeah.
Dune 2 is good.
Dune 2 was good.
This movie is not Dune 2. This is probably as far from Dune 2 as a film could be.
Thinking about Dune 2 guys at once.
Hey. But no people. So as we said earlier, before we get into it, like, I do remember the ad campaign feeling like this should be erotic, and this movie is not. So
did not get hard, raves Gogs.
Could not. Tried desperately.
Tried to. It was soft through the whole movie, just yanking just at it.
Dick in hand just, the whole time.
Just like, I'm talking like full wind back slap just to feel something. nothing came. So movie opens, I guess. Because that's what movies do. They start. And this one starts. Not Talia Shire goes to Q's baby factory, and my right. man.
For those of you confused at home, he's a OGBYN, right?
Yeah, he's an OGBYN. He's Q from Star Trek's a baby doctor.
Okay, I want to talk about this scene. We'll keep going because I'm gonna get
go ahead. All right, no. So he goes. So She shows up, and I guess this is their first meeting. Like, I don't know if she just moved to town. I think she just moved to town.
Just skip to the part where he just fingers her crazy style all over the place.
So he like lays her down on the thing. He puts her in the stirrups, and then he uncomfortably fondles her breasts. Okay, and then
so hold on though. Let me stop you there.
Sure.
I felt like this movie did a poor job at
Jesus Christ.
This movie did a poor job at illustrating what went wrong, at least to me, because I get what the scene set up, right? Like the doctor is there, the nurse that's with the doctor, she leaves. Yeah. And then he's like,
she canceled appointments.
The woman getting the Talia Shire look like, she's like, oh, it's weird that I'm going to get a full examination like this late into my pregnancy. And he's like, well, you're a new patient and I want to do it or whatever.
Right.
I get all that. It's uncomfortable. But like, I don't know. Like the only reason that I knew something that was wrong going on is because they played like the evil music. Cause like to me, he just looked like he was. I don't know. He looked like he was doing a checkup.
No, his facial expressions were very like.
But he looks weird in general. Like he just
when he took like his gloves off, TJ. Yeah. Like
oh yeah, he took his gloves off and like dropped it. Like he did that thing where he faked with the.
Let me point out too that I was on my phone looking at TikToks through most of this.
Hey, he was also rubbing her tit while he was like fingering her, and I don't think that's typical.
Hold on. Also, no, he wasn't.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, he was. He was giving her
that's
the
why
one
I said
two.
He did it crazy style. Like damn, he went all
that.
In.
I missed that.
Yeah, he was
also
he was tuning in Tokyo and checking the oils simultaneously.
Let's be honest. Like, unless he is like a gynecologist to the stars and is a billionaire, there is no chance Rebecca De Mornay is that broken up over John Delancey. No shot. Could not happen.
That house was dummy thick. He was bringing in the moolah.
We've talked about this a lot on the show, but as far as like movie houses go, that doctor house was sick as shit. Like it looked so awesome.
It was overlooking. It was like a cliff in Malibu. It was like where you would find like very high end pornography would be shot there.
I'm not making this up. I swear to God, I totally missed like the fondling and fingering, like completely to a point where. I'm going to watch it in the background to catch this on the Plex.
I was saying in the group chat, like he was doing that thing, like at the end of Snowpiercer, where you find out the kids are replacing stuff, and then one kid's just in there, just putting his hand in it, not like that with the oil.
I'm telling you, elbow deep. I completely like.
He could have pulled the baby out right then. He was so.
You guys
far.
Can't hear that, can you? No, I can just hear that. Right. All right. Good.
No, he was like combing the baby's hair.
Yeah, he was. It was graphic and it was uncomfortable.
Me because I totally missed it.
well,
when you actually watch this 10 seconds, you're gonna feel like such a tit.
I know. I'm doing it right now. Oh wait, I thought it was in like the very beginning. You get introduced to Ernie Hudson first.
Ernie Hudson's not first.
Yeah, this is about. I'm looking at the movie now. We're at 10 minutes in when this happens.
Okay. Well. All right, so let's run it back.
I'm watching it in real time right now.
In real time. So the family moves to the town. And
it is town situation.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Because there's an unknown hoodied black man lurking outside, and that just sets up everybody in 1992. And they're like, oh my god, we're gonna go hit him with a rake. And then they find out that no. It's just Ernie Hudson, and he's here from like the Better Tomorrow Foundation.
Like, explain why they are confused, as they have contracted this day service for developmentally disabled adults to build their fence, but are also wildly confused as to what's happening.
They delivered exactly what they said they would, and yes. Ernie Hudson shows up to build a fence to either keep people out or keep people in because that matters.
He doesn't fondle her boobs when he fingers her, but he does take his gloves off. Oh, hold on. Never mind.
Yeah, he really goes. He's
rubbing the belly, right? Which seems
Maybe it's that.
Okay, yeah. So, okay, I'm not... Okay, the glove taking off is bad, but like... Yeah. Other than that, he just like rubs her stomach, and I don't know, maybe that's what they do.
As someone
thank you, Harvey Weinstein.
The answer is they do not.
No, I don't mean it like that. I don't know. What's a fucking doctor exam? I've never been pregnant.
Well,
I mean, the glove taking off thing is the tip off that something is wrong. That and again,
and the music and that look on his eye.
Well, he just looks like that, though. That's what I'm saying. Like,
well, that guy looks like a rapist.
He looks like a creep. I mean, you know, he's Q and all, but he looks like I couldn't stop thinking of fucking Star Trek when I was watching this either. But.
Shout out to Q and all. Can't wait for those drops to come back. So Ernie Hudson shows up. He's the lovable, mentally handicapped black man who is here to build
this fucking character
ends up being magical, like Stephen King always intended.
Well, the biggest problem is that he's their handicapped black house slave. Like, it's so weird.
Also,
like,
he's black and, you know, mentally handicapped, which is a hat on a hat situation to begin with. That was a joke.
Handicapped handy man. So,
also, like, Ernie Hudson is trying, and I think he's trying to play it with some sensitivity.
Yeah, he doesn't come off
as disabled. Like, no. It's like weird. Like, he comes off as strange, and they should have got a disabled actor to do this. They really should have.
1,000%. Because, like, it's not as bad as, like, you guys ever seen
Radio?
It's not like
The Ringer.
No, I was gonna say, have you ever seen clips of that Rosie O'Donnell movie where she's
the other,
like,
sister?
Or no. Like, I'm
riding on the bus with my sister. Yeah,
she's like, I went to the store, and it's like, it's not that bad, but it's still bad. Like, it's like, still like
he's trying very hard, but it's like super awkward.
Like, he doesn't want to be disrespectful.
Also, it's, like, I again, like, the like choice,
you know, shout out to our retarded Americans. They're all great people, but out, like.
Yeah. They're Shane Gillis said it the best. They're having the best time. Like, they're having a great time. But, like, I'm sorry. Like,
distracting.
This like, handicap agency, like, just sends over Ernie Hudson to, like, work at their house full time. Like, it's so, like.
No, he's just there to build a fence.
Yeah.
Oh, no, but then they hire him on for more tasks.
I guess.
Because my man is everywhere.
It is. I'm sorry. I'm looking at this in a 2025 lens, but it's kind of problematic to have a mentally disabled black man as your house servant.
In 1992, this was progressive as hell.
You know, I ran a nonprofit for a little bit that, you know, worked with adults with developmental disabilities, and they have, like, job programs and stuff. Not house slave programs, but, you know. Right. Usually when you take, you know, these cats to the job, at least the first day, somebody goes with them to introduce everybody and make sure everything's copacetic. They don't just, like, turn them loose and, like, with no materials, instructions.
He had his work.
Like, he had, like, his stuff, but, like, there's nothing on site.
Right. Like, yeah. They just get a PO number and go down to Home Depot. Like, what the fuck?
Get it done.
Also, like, what is Hart Bochner's job in here? That it's like, are they just charitable? Or is, like, look, this is the cheapest way we can get the fences to like exploit these, like, retarded men.
Well, he's like a research scientist or something.
Or something.
Like, I cannot wait to talk about Hart Bochner's
paying
fucking performance in this movie.
They are paying so many people to do I don't know what, when, you know, Annabella Ciora's entire job is volunteering at the community greenhouse 2 days a week.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then building her own death trap greenhouse later. Anyway,
sorry.
So let's start. So Ernie Hudson shows up. They immediately put him to work because progressive politics.
Because of woke.
Yeah. Talia Shire gets treated like a Muppet, and then she leaves.
Okay, took me a second.
And then she's like,
she gets savagely fingered, but not while her boob was being touched, so it's okay.
I didn't say that. That's not what I said. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I'm saying that the film doesn't do a wonderful job at illustrating what happened.
Doesn't do a wonderful job, full stop.
Yeah, fair. Okay.
Also, you know, I brought this up in the group text. I know it has nothing to do with, like, the overall problem of this movie.
movies are not lit this way anymore, where it's like they're in the hospital room and it's just like a garage floodlight pointed at some wall. Like, it is bizarre looking. Like, the whole movie, order, except for the end, ostensibly takes place solely at noon. Yeah. But it's like dark everywhere they go. Go ahead, Gog. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to recognize your point of order.
No one reacted to my gaslit joke, and that pissed me clean the fuck off. That was a good joke.
My brain,
I may not have got it.
Yeah, I thought you meant like gaslighting, like the, you know, like the psychological gaslighting.
You meant like
how this film was lit.
Oh, no, okay, now I get it.
Because the whole movie's gaslighting.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I'm giving you gold here, people.
I don't know. Not your best work. You got to play to your crowd. We're stupid as fuck.
It's no Golemite or Stare Devil.
Stare Devil is amazing.
But anyway, so she gets blasted. She goes and sees her husband. She's like, we need to find a new OBGYN. And he's like, why? She's like, call the lawyers. So then the lawyers get turned loose, and now we're accused.
And then on the news, they're like, oh, by the way, this guy has been fingering people nonstop.
Like, dude, would you name the victim by name?
Of course not. Of course not. And then, like, hey, and she was the first one to accuse him. Like, what the fuck?
She's not suing him.
Like, he ruined Rebecca De Mornay's whole ass life.
Yeah, well, so, and it seems like a lazy writing thing where they're like, shit, how's she gonna know? And they're like, I don't know, just tell them, say it on the fucking news. I don't fucking know. I got fucking dinner plans.
So Q's in his office. He's being sued to pieces because after Talia Shire came out, four more women came out. The other four women are suing him, but she's above that, even though their money situation is curious at best. My man
takes the shortcut home.
This is one of those movies where it's like back in the 90s, your husband could be like a nebulous research scientist and provide a house, comfortable living. Also, you can hire slaves. Like,
partially due to the impossibly horrendous drip and haircuts in this, everybody appears to be 47 years old, but they're actually, I think Annabella Sior is like 29 or 30, and Hartbachner is like 32.
That blows my fucking mind.
So Q decides to have a 9mm sub for dinner, and then
hilarious suicide scene, by the way. Very very like old style TV where you see the gun and then it pans.
It's like the scene in The Dark Knight Returns where that general gets caught and shoots himself. Right.
Yeah.
So as a result of this, Rebecca De Mornay. That would count as a comedy nowadays. Rebecca De Mornay, who is with child, presumably also has been fingered by her husband, finds
out. That's not how babies are made, Cox. I don't know if you know this.
Finds out. I don't know, man.
He just flicked it in there from all the other women.
He grabbed it from someone else. Scraped the sperm off of it. So they find out that because of, and I don't know, I guess this is also how lawsuits work, because all these women are suing dude and dude is not here no more. They are leveraging the estate. So she is basically broke, penniless. She has no control of her assets and she's pregnant. That causes her faint and to lose the baby. And there's nothing funny about that. So we're going to move on. She then decides to go on that revenge tip and finds out that the woman, the original accuser, fucking Adrian, needs a nanny so that she can work
because
in
she's
the backyard
so
of her
busy.
Own house.
Right. This woman does nothing. She has a volunteer job at a greenhouse, and
she
doesn't
use a lot.
My wife works twice as hard, as hard as this woman. My wife. With two children, and we don't have a. If my wife had asked me for a nanny so she could spend more time in the backyard, I'd be like, "Lady, what?"
This is like peak like white people in the 90s too. It's just like these people are rich.
Well, it is important to know that they have to hire her because the retarded slave agency has explicitly forbidden Ernie Hudson to hold babies some reason.
So now
that is an important plot point that is addressed verbally.
Yes, absolutely. Also, so now hold on. Before I forget, I'm sorry, Gogs. I really am. But the husband in this movie, the first time you see him with the daughter, he's singing the song from the HMS Pinafore, and I don't know that.
The Simpsons.
When they go into their fucking living room, there's a poster of the HMS Pinafore in their living room, and I was like
that, if I wrote that movie, that is shorthand for the husband is secretly gay. I don't know why else you would have
shorthand.
That.
That's longhand.
I only know that
from the Simpsons.
Very well, I shall send you to heaven before I send you to hell.
Uh-oh, I'm the captain of a ship.
Poor little buttercup.
I could sing the whole thing just from The Simpsons. Only The Simpsons parts, but yeah.
Three little girls from school are we. Everything is sort of girlish glee.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, so
everything.
Ernie Hudson.
I am an Englishman.
Sorry.
So Ernie Hudson is their outside slave, and they've now hired Rebecca Morton.
That has even worse connotations.
Jesus Christ, dude. It's not my fault.
That's what the movie says.
So they put her in the basement, their little basement room, and then she spends the rest of the film trying to unravel this woman's life. So this woman, Talia Shire, has asthma. That'll come into play later.
Damn. They never stop with this fucking
asthma. She stops breathing for a good 7 hours and is fine.
Yeah.
So they start by, also, immediately after, I forget what her name is, Rebecca Rooney, her name's like Talbot or Tinkerbell or something like
Philip.
I'm pretty sure it's Talbot.
So they, she shows up and like
her name's Florsheim or
almost Happy. Immediately.
B. Dalton,
Julianne Moore, and her husband, who is a unrepentant horn dog, come in to go.
What is going on in that guy's head? Because like I don't know if you're getting ready to mention this, they see Rebecca De Mornay, and he is like cartoon wolf eye fucking her.
Yeah,
and Julianne Moore's like, yeah. Julianne Moore's like, I know what you're thinking about.
She just taps him on the shoulder, like, I'd hit that. It's like, all right.
And not for nothing, but Rebecca De Mornay, very attractive. Horrendous haircut notwithstanding. Very attractive woman. And this guy is like, oh my God. He's like, damn, I should get a nanny.
And
like,
she's possibly a billionaire real estate agent.
Yeah, she's ordering.
Hold on. So about that, this scene, I swear to God, I was eating and I almost like spit my food up. There's a part in this dinner scene coming up where Julianne Moore's like, well, you try to do everything your husband, bring home $30,000 a year. I was like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, what the fuck?
Adjusted for inflation, that's not BMW Power Lunch hiring Harvard graduates as your secretary money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think she might have said 50, but it was very low.
Even still.
Yeah.
What's 50K in 1992 worth? I'll find out. Thank you, Google. It's worth about $112,000 today.
That's pretty good.
Livable.
But not like the way she's living.
Yeah, Hollywood real estate agent.
Agent, period.
Yeah. Smoking hard and crossing double yellow lines to
go. Does anybody else cringe when people smoke in movies? It's like in a restaurant. I can't imagine eating around people smoking.
We did it for years
in a restaurant.
I don't remember that. I really
shout
don't.
Out.
We used to be a proper country.
Shout out to the Bennigans in Laurel, where the smoking section was Section 8, which is kind of funny, and. Yeah. They were the best tippers. The people who would tip you the most money were the ones truly enjoying their meal with a cigarette. And they were maybe 3 feet. They were on like a platform, like 3 feet above the rest of the restaurant. That was keeping the smoke away.
I worked in Laurel around there when I was a teenager around there. And that was like a very popular date spot for people who had hustling jobs. Yeah,
sure.
I'm the best tippers. So shout out to all the people that would smoke and order rib and shrimp combos and
big old shout out to Black Dudes and Laurel smoking Newport Kings driving Infinity Q45s in 1999 and 2000. You guys were the salt of the earth, and I miss you very dearly.
100% tips. I'm telling you, the best. So these two show up. They take her out to dinner. We find out that Lloyd Braun only smokes around Julianne Moore. They're chatting. They're having their moments. Meanwhile, Peyton, her name is Peyton, Rebecca De Mornay's character.
Go with Talbot, though. I like that better.
So Talbot is down in the basement showing like old vampire movies to the daughter to try and win her over as her new cool mom.
Right.
And so basically the entire movie, it's very boring. And it's not sexy. I was waiting for this movie to get sexy.
It has a couple frames of sexiness later.
So Rebecca Normandy does the following thing. Shire's earring kept falling out. So then Talbot was like, "Oh, the baby almost choked on this." Like, she keeps doing these things to undermine. You find that Lloyd Braun and Julianne Moore used to be an item back in the day, and then she convinces Lloyd Braun to have a surprise party.
He left her for reasons I can't begin to guess to be with Annabella Ciora, who is an attractive woman, you know, sans that haircut, but not even in the caliber of either of those two. I wrote this movie, right? Like, he would have been fucking all of them, because that's interesting and that builds a conflict, but he's like morally incorruptible somehow. It's like, oh, there's only one woman for me. There's no like tension in it at all.
There's not even there's not even like a hint that he's like,
no,
either way. Like, there's no, like the wife, I mean, at the end of the movie or towards the end of the movie, they try to build like the wife feels like that he's cheating on her with Julianne Moore. He doesn't ever give any. It would have been a better movie if even there was like hints of that, because they just talk and there's not even like flirting.
And they're like, but they hang out with each other too. It's not like he's just running away to hang out with her all the time. Like, there's one instance where she gets snitched on. He gets snitched on by the fucking dry cleaner, sir. You can tell this movie doesn't take place in Baltimore, because like that wouldn't happen.
Right.
Yeah. Also, before I forget, this is a very minor thing. If I come downstairs, right, and my housekeeper, my inside housekeeper, is picking ice up off the floor and putting it back in, you're fucking fired. That's gross. Why are you doing that?
Yeah, that is disgusting.
Weird. Well, anyway, also I forgot to mention this. Rebecca De Mornay is actually breastfeeding the infant, because she planned this thing out. So here's a point of contention. She planned this thing out so far that she went and
she also has this plan instantly when the John DeLancey blows his brains out. So like, she is sitting on weird shit 24/7. Like, you don't just come up with this.
Like, she makes sure that she's basically making sure she's a wet nurse for the opportunity to then invade this woman's house and breastfeed her at night. So now this woman's life is like, her baby doesn't want to be around her. Now her daughter's turned against her. And now she thinks that her husband, who is an absolute rock, is having an affair with his old lover. And by the way, Ernie Hudson was like painting the gutters or whatever, and caught a glimpse of Rebecca De Mornay breastfeeding little Joey. And then she gets in his ass and then sets him up on that pedophile tip. And guess what? The family turns on him instantly. Sends his ass a packet.
Well, hold on. You know, you missed. The Rebecca De Mornay planted the little girl's underpants in his toolbox.
Yes.
Yeah. But the girl, he has again made no indications. Simple,
sweet. She loves him. Like,
the girl has said nothing. Says nothing after the fact. Rebecca De Mornay, who is they're obviously catching weird vibes off of already, just throw this in there, and it's like, get out of here, you fucking retarded pedophile, you, on your bike that we just bought.
I shouldn't. I mean, whatever. cancel me all you want. The scene where Rebecca De Mornay dresses down Ernie Hudson. So
because it's like it belongs in like a Harmony Korine movie or something. Yeah, like it doesn't fit this movie.
Not work in this movie.
She's this like bloodless movie.
Yeah. Hey, are you
looking at me, retard?
Yeah, it's like Jesus Christ, like calm down.
Don't fuck with me, retard. Like I was like, God damn. Okay.
Yeah, so it looks like
also, this movie works.
How many
way
times
better?
Has Sean said that to me in real life? You know?
Yeah.
Like, all right, man. Calm down, buddy.
But it's usually like when I'm just like in your ear.
When we're making love. <Don't>,
yeah. This movie works way better if Ernie Hudson is like Hart Bochner's little older brother or son. He's like related to the family because like it's just. It's like they love him and then he's gone and then he's just back there for some reason. And like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
He there must've been the Shining, the way he magically reappears to save everybody.
Like shipped away. He's right? Like, he's shipped away, but like shipped away, like what? Like 5 blocks away from the house.
They do make a point to say, and we'll get to it later, but like, they do make a point to say, it's like, oh, by the way, they re-released radio back into the wild. So if he shows up, heads up, like,
yeah.
I don't, and then, and
because and I like, mentioned this in the text, this you're talking about, this is what, 92?
Yeah, 92.
You've got Ernie Hudson, who is a big man.
Yeah.
He is a big black guy. Yeah. He is retarded and he is an alleged pedophile. And this company's like, yeah, we'll just cut him back loose in the suburbs. They would have executed him. Like, yeah. No shot in 1992. They're like, yeah, that's fine. Just go.
Oh, well, it would have been the Green Mile all over again.
Yeah, you can go. You can go like, you know, awkwardly put posts in somewhere else. That took you a half an hour to put that bird bath up, but whatever, that's fine. I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you and Mr. Jangles are in trouble. So
Mr. Jangles.
So but yeah, then he ends up Scatman Carruthering his way back into the plot. But where are we? So Rebecca De Mornay is just taking Tally Shire's life apart brick by brick. She convinces Lloyd Braun to have a surprise birthday.
Bro, he sucks in this movie.
He does suck in this movie.
Aren't you with me? Does this not work better if he's fucking at least one of these three women?
It works better if he's at least attempted, like and
or
like
something.
Like, and TJ is maybe back. He can now join the meeting. It'd be good if he like. If there was like just like a kiss that he's like, no, wait, no, stop.
Yeah.
Like
that Rebecca De Mornay sees or that he kisses her or something. Because like
she like
again,
sleeps into bed next to him and he rolls over and drapes an arm on her and then
0% chance she comes up there and presses up on him like that after his wife's presumably had her 58th hospitalization for asthma, because you know this is going on nonstop.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, he's a man, like shit happens, you know, like he's a person, like a moment of weakness, but he is, like you said, he's just like completely steadfast. And to be honest, with the life he's providing this woman, he should get to get a little piece. Like, nice. Not for nothing. Like,
right.
If my old lady had me set up like that, I'd be like, yeah, go ahead and break you off a piece, go get some. It's fine. I don't care. I've got rhododendrons to deal with.
So the gaslighting continues, like Talbot's like sure that Talia Shire's husband's proposal doesn't get in the mail, so maybe it'll put his job in jeopardy. And she's convinced that Julianne Moore is cheating on him, and she accuses him as such during the surprise party, because, as Sean mentioned earlier, the dry cleaner sold him out because Talbot's planted a lighter on his jacket, and he only smokes when he's around her, and they were trying to keep it a secret. Yada, 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 bing, bang, boom. Her life is just going to absolute shit.
But still not bad.
Still not bad. And then Rebecca De Mornay, like, punctures her asthma inhaler to make sure that won't work for her. And then Rebecca De Mornay goes out to their new greenhouse situation and sets up this elaborate trap to...
you got one shot at this. Hope the wind doesn't blow too hard.
Right, like this is you can't, no reloads here. Like she has the vents at the top of the greenhouse cranked all the way up, and then she rigs up a Wile E. Coyote-esque like tripwire situation with a shovel. This movie is also very shovel heavy, so that when someone opens the greenhouse door, it will cause the windows to go into free fall, smash against the frame, and rain glass on whoever it's supposed to set up to kill Talia Shire. But because Talbots was like, hey, wind chimes are good for a baby. They're not. And she made wind chimes happen at the house. And because Julianne Moore saw said wind chimes, and then Julianne Moore is thinking through listing of homes, she saw a, in 1992 dollars, $980,000 beachfront mansion for sale. So then she goes and she takes her little magnifying glass. Like
$2.7 million or something?
It's like, it'd be bananas, right? So yeah. She takes her little magnifying glass and says, wait, those are wind chimes. I've seen wind chimes before. Yeah. Let me go check out the microfiche.
So
the Hall of Public Records. And she finds out about the fact that this was the murder house, well, the suicide house. And then she looks at the pictures and she sees there's Talbot's. And she's like, oh, shit, I better drive very recklessly to go warn my
I can tell that from this 13P photograph.
Also, like, it was so fucking hilarious, her, like recklessly driving to get there. Like, it was like, okay, like, you could have just...
Well, she was using her... She was using her Sports Illustrated football phone to like try and reach the woman, but she couldn't find her anyway. She's like driving that. She called the house and Rebecca was like, well, she's not here.
And her inside slave is like, what do I tell the people? It's like, you have a Harvard education. You figure it out. I'm abroad and I'm in a movie from the 1930s. Look at these shoulder pads. I'm smoking with the fucking windows up.
Yeah, so then she's hauling ass there.
Get out of my way, god damn it.
And Talia Shire's at the plant, the volunteer plant factory, and Steve there didn't realize she was there, otherwise she would have gotten the message. So then she shows up and Rebecca Mornay is like,
so much time at this fucking community garden that like you can call her there. Like it is, you know, people think like, oh, I should call her there. That is fucking bizarre.
Yeah. So then De Mornay maliciously eats a green apple. Julianne Moore shows up. Julianne Moore accuses her of being who she is. And she's like, well, Talia Shire is out in the greenhouse. Go check her out. And then she's like fucking eating this apple. I was like with a knife like right next to her mouth. And then Julianne Moore walks in, knocks over the shovel. The glass rains down on her. Just cuts her to ribbons allegedly, and then Rebecca Mornay makes sure she's
At this point, if you're Julianne Moore, boy detective, like, and you just drop this bombshell, are you then going to be like, okay, I'll go see for myself? It's like, no, bitch,
right?
Yeah, we're going down to this greenhouse.
I think that actually made a lot of sense because it kind of worked. But Julianne Moore's character was very much "fuck you, I'm eating." Like, she's just going to do her thing.
Yeah, but like, she just blew up her entire spot, and then like she's like, "Oh, I'm sad now." She's in the greenhouse. It's like, I'm going.
Maybe it's a product of our time because we now expect people to act in the most insane ways possible as humans.
Yeah.
But like later in the movie, when they accuse her of being a bad person, they're just like, "Just get out of the house and give us the keys." Like you're clearly a psychopath. You're not just going to listen to these orders. But we're going to just trust you. We're not going to call the cops. Yeah. We're not
going to we're going to kill you. Like, right. You cannot be trusted.
Correct. So anyway.
Go set up the greenhouse.
So Julianne Moore got. And then Talia Shire comes home and sees that she got. And then that inspires an asthma attack that almost gets got her. And that throws her into the hospital.
It got her.
So now she's in the hospital. Now De Mornay is being De Hornay with Lloyd
Braun. Before or after she puts like the perfume in the asthma thing? That was after, right? Or before?
This was during.
During. Whatever. Okay.
So then De Mornay tries to get it on until she dies with Lloyd Braun. Lloyd Braun's like, there's only one woman for me. Then fucking Talia Shire gets back from the hospital and everything's kind of hunky-dory until it's not, because then
bro, she is like, she has an asthma attack and she's laying there for how long can you just not breathe?
So I thought I thought this movie was going to be really interesting and actually kill her.
Seemed like
I was like, that's something, like that's different.
God, you're a scientist or as close as we have on here. Like, yeah, how long can you not breathe without suffering some kind of permanent brain injury?
With asthma, it's not you can't breathe, it's that you're very restricted.
Gotcha.
Oh, all right.
So she's just probably like on like barely whispers of air, but there's still air coming in. So she's not like suffocating to death.
Yeah, because I thought they literally killed her. I was like, wow, I didn't see that coming, but nope. Based. Nope. Yeah, I mean, it would have been interesting. At least it would have been different, you know?
So now she gets back out of the hospital, and she realizes that Talbots has implanted herself even more into the situation, and she's like
wearing her bracelet.
She feels very disconnected and upset and mad. And then, and forgive me, I do not recall what sends her to go to the house. What sent her to
somebody Rebecca saw Dormady's the fucking house. I don't know if the assistant calls, she gets the word about right. the newspaper article from somewhere.
Also, oh, no, like, no, wait.
Doesn't this movie make a little bit more sense if, like, she sees Rebecca De Mornay doing this shit throughout the course of the movie and nobody believes her?
Yes, absolutely.
Hold on. She goes to the real estate lady's office. She's in the real estate lady's office, and she sees the listing.
That's what it is.
Yeah. And she sees this, that the listing was for Dr. Mott, who... So
this newspaper is doing a lot of heavy lifting in this movie, by the way.
Julianne Moore put two and two together because of the wind chimes. She sees that the listing on top of her paper was for this Dr. Mott home. So then she goes to the home. She sees that the nursery is set up in the same way. She finds out that the family lost a baby or whatever. She sees the breast pump there. And then she's like,
the fucking realtor in that scene kills me. He's like, what kind of toy do you think that is?
Right.
Like, I mean, I'm a fucking idiot and I know what a fucking breast pump is. Like, calm down, man.
So then she comes home. She tells Lloyd Braun what's going on. They kick her out. Right. Send her away. Like,
this is preposterous. I won't be recommending you to my friends. Get out of here.
Right. And then lo and behold,
you goofy bastard.
She lures Lloyd Braun downstairs with opera music, brains him with a fucking shovel. He goes ass over tits over the railing. Over also, what a high ceiling in that basement. Like, that was like a good.
Also, he's fine too. Like,
he is not. Well, pause. He is not fine because out of his own mouth, he says, "I've broken both of my legs," which I find interesting later.
Well, he's a science man. So, so now,
and you can only smoke in the lab sometimes.
Yeah. Right. So now, her and De Mornay get into a shovel v knife fight. Her daughter, her daughter squirrels away with the baby, and then they do a little switcheroo with a baby monitor. At some point, there's a shining breakthrough the dorm minute where Talia Shire.
You know, shout out to Rebecca De Mornay, her best part of this movie, where she's just beating the fuck out of that door. Like, that actually works in a better movie.
Yeah, agreed.
It like does. The Shining, I guess.
So there's more fighting going on. Rebecca De Mornay is about to give Talia Shire the old coup Gracie, but she's faking an asthma attack. So she's just like, I'll let you just die that way. I'm going to go back to hitting the retarded fellow with this fire poker.
Oh, he is in the attic holding the baby.
Yes.
Yeah.
He has just appeared.
He's just appeared somehow, like through The Shining or whatever. So then
I'm glad I'm not the only one that was confused. I was like, where did he come from? Like,
he came from a different draft of this script is what happened there.
You see him back on the streets after they released him into the wilds, where he's like,
well, there's a point like where he's like, something. Isn't he like following Rebecca Mornay on his bike at one scene?
I think so. I don't know. And then Talia Shire pops back up. She's like, not in my house, bitch. And then gives her a fucking spear through the goddamn attic window.
Yeah.
And Rebecca De Mornay gets impaled like bigness from The Crow.
But she doesn't get impaled, though. Doesn't she just crush the fence?
No.
It's set up to be impaled, but like, I don't think it actually was. I don't think so.
Hold on. I think I still have it up.
Or maybe it was Big Time. What is Michael? What is his name? Is it Big Time or Big Business? Top Dollar.
Top Dollar.
Shout out to The Crow. Much better movie.
Great movie. Yeah.
Solid movie.
Everybody's like, well, we're going to live here for the rest of our life, even though there's been two murders and we've got our lovable, mentally handicapped.
So she's like, keep her back. Do you want to hold the baby now? Now that, you know, sorry, we thought you were a pedophile and ruined your already probably very difficult life. And then they wander out with no regard for the father, who is downstairs, presumably bleeding to death from his
eternally.
All right, let's see here. Not impaled. She just, it's Sean's entirely right. Like, it is set up like she's going to be impaled, but she just kind of mashes the fence. I guess they couldn't have the money for, they didn't have impale money.
And I guess somebody did call the cops, because the cops do arrive. They ask zero questions. And
well, this is like the whitest neighborhood on earth. So another white lady crashing out a window and hysterically falling and crushing a fence is going to draw a bit of attention.
and that's it. That is the movie. A movie that
this movie hilariously has like TV credits, because like they just the movie just ends with a picture of the house and the credits rolling over it, like, which
yeah.
just, I don't it's know like
it's Days funnier. Of Our Lives.
It's just funny looking to me. Like, at least go to black. Like, why are you showing the house?
Movie's weird. TJ used to ask a question on the show, like, when, you know, before everything went woke, where he'd be like, is there a good movie in this movie somewhere? And I would say this, yes. Like,
yeah,
this
I agree movie, completely.
Everything there is there. But whatever, it was like they did all the fucking resolutions on opposite day or something. It's like whatever the correct decision to make filmmaking was, they went the opposite way. And it just makes it this like bloodless, like, I think Gogs called it, boring. Like, I don't care about any of these people. Like, the only person I care about in this whole movie is Ernie Hudson.
Yeah.
And like, it's hard to even get too invested in him, because he's like, okay. Right. He sounds less like he's mentally disabled and more like he just got here from Ghana and learned English this week. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't seem like really slow. He just seems like he's having an issue navigating the language.
Is he mentally handicapped or is he nervous?
Right.
Yeah, it's rough. It's very rough. That whole character is, you could have just written him out of the movie or come up with something better. Like, it's a very strange choice.
But yeah, and it's just it's not, to go back to your question, Sean, like, the setup is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, the setup for the movie is good, and like all the mind fuck shit that Rebecca De Mornay does is interesting.
Yeah.
Like, it's like malicious and it's well thought out and it's clever, but the resolution and it's just like,
I don't know, you needed to
push the envelope of this thing. You needed to have her, like, you need to have everyone legitimately turn on Talia Shire. Like, you need to have,
yeah,
like, you need her to be,
you need to have her be like, everybody thinks I'm crazy.
Here's the deal.
Yeah.
Just like in Trading Places, when they finally break Winthorpe, and then Winthorpe is drunk in the Santa costume and he comes at Eddie Murphy, and because he has been
first of all, it was angel dust.
Yeah. So you needed to push her all the, you needed her to be rock bottom. And then she figures it out. And then she claws.
Yeah.
She needs to be, like, metaphorically clawing her way out of her own grave.
Like, this family needs to survive, but also be broken at the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. That's a good way to put it.
TJ, I think you just mentioned about the credits, but this does feel very much like a TV movie. And maybe that's why. Like, there's got to be a draft of this script where it's, like, way sexier and way more violent.
Yeah, there's no like teeth to this at all, like at all. Like, everything is very cut and dry.
But between this and Fatal Attraction, A Single White Female, I don't know if Hollywood scriptwriters were really worried about their mistresses like impugning on their lives or something. But this seems like a very weird trope for a very small amount of time in movies.
Yeah, true. Well, Single White Female is the same year as this. Believe it or not. So
no.
This movie made a killing, by the way.
Really?
People used to go see fucking anything.
Take a guess. Take a guess on financials for this thing. First of all, how much do you think it cost?
Budget 15.
What year? 92? 3 million.
11.9 million. Take a stab at box office.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I don't know. 65.
TJ?
I'll go 70.
$140
million. Oh, my God.
Fuck. This thing is a certified 10-time return on investment banger.
Why, though? What the fuck? That's insane, dude.
I don't know.
How is that even possible?
This thing's a cash cow.
That's crazy.
Also, this guy directed LA Confidential, which how is that possible? Because this movie is not very well directed.
That's fucking wild.
Well, I looked it up, and the Hart Bochner guy, he in LA Confidential, maybe he just got thrown a bone by the director, plays, you know, when they're like, they're talking the show that Kevin Spacey is a consultant on.
He's
the lead character in the universe TV show. Vice or whatever the fuck it's called.
Well, yeah, this movie's not directed bad, but it's no fucking LA Confidential.
No, it's directed bad. It's terrible. Okay. It looks terrible. That acting is bad. Like, no, it's directed bad. I would say this direction is horrendous. I can't imagine this guy making this and then making LA Confidential. That legitimately blows my mind.
It is. He also made 8 Mile.
8 Mile. Eh.
Yeah. I mean, I like it.
You like the some of the scenes, but that movie is pretty bad overall.
Lotto, I don't fit you.
I mean, it's better than this.
So
8 Mile, yeah. Better than Hand That Rocks the Cradle. the great debate's finally settled.
But obviously, what do we know? This movie made a shit ton. You know what this is?
How boring was this year for movies then?
Well, you know how we were talking about, like,
Everybody's coming down from Jurassic Park. Movies for adults. Yeah,
this is a mom starring and dad adults movie.
Yeah,
yeah, this is exactly what that is. Like, this is just like a boring ass. Like,
this is like the bad end of The Fugitive. You know what I mean? Like, right, this is right. Yeah.
Like this. So wait. So also 92, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Basic Banger. Instinct, Banger. A League of Their Own, Scent of a Woman,
Banger.
Reservoir Dogs, My Cousin Vinny. Unforgiven. This was a hell of a year.
Good year.
Last of the Mohicans, Malcolm X, Alien 3, shout out Alien 3. Batman Returns. Glengarry Glenn Ross.
Batman Returns still made a shitload of money.
Oh, it was a huge hit.
Universal Soldier, Candyman.
Fucking Universal Soldier.
92
rules. Like, that movie's so good.
100%.
Army of Darkness, White Men Can't Jump, Patriot Games.
Damn, 92.
Lawnmower Man.
92 rocked.
And Under Siege.
Shout out to Casey Ryback.
What a year for fucking movies.
Shout out to the wrestler Ryback. Feed me more.
All right. You want to get into it? I feel like we talked way more about this movie than I expected. So that's good.
I feel like we're contractually obligated to get into it. So.
Yeah.
All right. Sean,
four.
That's correct. That is correct.
It's not unforgettable because Ernie Hudson's whole deal is pretty memorable, not in the way that you want. This movie is very frustrating because I want to like this movie because it has a lot of shit in it that one, they don't make movies like this anymore unless it's like some weird Tubi movie that's like, you know, not very good. But all the bones are there. This is a very easy movie to fix. Like, and it wouldn't have cost any more money to fix it. It's just like, it's so like all the rough edges are sanded off. Like, it's just,
do you think it just got noted to death? Like it was like, it feels like, no, like, that's too much. That's
it feels
too
like
much.
There is a very horny, very bloody, slightly more retarded version of the script somewhere. And they just like, It literally feels like, and you know, I don't think this is what it is. It's like, we want this to be able to play on TV. Like, just in case we don't get theatrical distribution somehow, even though we spent $11 million in 1992 money, like we need this to be able to play on like, basic cable, whatever, USA Network.
If they crop the scenes where they're fondling tit out and out, like, yeah, this thing can be on TV right now.
They have to cut, what, like, a couple fucks out of it? Like, it's nothing, you know?
Yeah.
But this movie is like, there's a better movie underneath this Scream to be born. It's just like, they beefed it somehow. They fucked it yeah. real bad. I don't get how, but,
yeah,
Gogs.
It's also four. It is, I agree. I won't forget it, but like, I kept wanting this to like, I'd never seen this movie before, right? But I do have like distinct memories of watching network television and the ad campaign for this movie and be like, that seems like a sexy thriller. And I was saying that at 12. It's so like toothless, like Sean's saying. It's like, it's weird that it found a market, but I guess it's sort of like, it's like sort of a safe, unerotic thriller.
Bro, 9.5 weeks had already come out by this time. You know what I mean? Like yeah, they had horny yeah. movies in the movie theater.
It came out the same year as Basic Instinct and The Bodyguard and yeah. Lethal Weapon 3
yeah.
and Aladdin. Like, so like, what a year.
The sexiest thriller of all, Aladdin.
I like how young Goggs describes movies the way Marge Simpson would. Like, ooh, this seems like a sexy thriller.
Oh, shout out to 1992, Honeymoon in Vegas, and Mo Money. I can't stop now. But yeah, it's not, it's, I mean, I'll remember it, but it's just like, why? Right. And to what end? It could have been cool. It could have been an edgier, grittier version of this movie. I bet I wouldn't put it past him. I bet this is probably kicking around some Hollywood studio, like demanding a remake.
Is there a Hong Kong
that hasn't happened already?
Infernal Affairs version of this? Is this a Hong Kong remake? Yeah, like The Departed to fucking like, Infernal Affairs.
Like there's got. I bet. No, I bet. I just bet that,
a handu that rocks the cradle somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. You know. Yeah. Let Korea catch a whiff of this and make up something good. Oh, like, fuck yeah. I don't know.
But the guy that made I Saw the Devil make this movie again.
Oh, right, wow, because yeah. guess who knows how to do vengeance movies really well?
The Koreans.
They love it.
But that was, it's just toothless. And if it was edgier and grittier, it could have been cool because the concepts aren't bad, TJ.
Yeah, I agree. It's a two for me. I hated this movie, man. I thought this movie, this movie had no grasp on my attention span at all. I just liked the handicap abuse. That was the only part of the movie I thought was funny. I agree with you, both of you guys, completely, where like, you know, the essence of drama is conflict, right? And no one is really conflicted. Like the other thing, I thought the movie could have been better if they framed it differently, like maybe if we didn't know who Rebecca De Mornay was, and like,
yeah, that's a good point too.
Oh, that becomes like a big reveal, or
yeah, something. Isn't yeah. that a better movie? Like, if
you're right,
she just shows up, and then maybe through the course of the film, you find out about the doctor, you find out about all that, and then it's
but you don't even open with the finger,
no,
right?
Oh no, 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 no.
You got to keep the fingering.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can
flash from part of the picture.
Well, you can flash back to it, but like, I don't like the structure of the film. I think it's more interesting. And to go back to Sean's point, like to me, if I had this premise in front of me, you don't know who Rebecca De Mornay is until like it's ultimately revealed, right? And again, you could play both sides because the wife could you know see things and like maybe she's losing her mind or maybe. Rebecca like, De Mornay.
You gaslight the audience. Like you don't realize that's
yeah, yeah, you make it suspenseful. You add drama because
husband really be cheating?
Well, exactly. Lloyd Braun could really be cheating with his old flame because maybe the old flame, instead of the way they frame it in the movie, where like him and his old flame are just buddies, have been buddies forever. Maybe she comes in from out of town, or you know what I mean? Like
Ernie Hudson an actual threat.
Like, well, you cut Ernie Hudson out completely. Like, I don't even, that character is completely ridiculous. Like, I don't understand it. I don't get why they did it. And then their ultimate choices are, again, like, he's mentally handicapped, and he's a big black eye, and he's a slave. Like, what are you doing? Like, all it's like, did you just have
it's offensive on a lot of levels.
Yeah, it never stops being offensive. And I just feel like, again,
the screenwriter had some personal peccadilloes he needed to work through.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't get it. But to go to Sean's point, yeah, I think you could take the bare bones of this movie and make something interesting. But like, it's a sexy thriller that's not sexy. It's not a thriller because it's not suspenseful, because you know exactly you're with Rebecca De Mornay through all her little schemes. So like, nothing's even surprising. You know what's going to happen. You're not like tense because this movie has
no. And maybe you could even, you know, since you bring that up, maybe you could even, if you want to get real weird with it, you could make it like a villainous thing and you're actually following Rebecca De Mornay on her revenge plot and frame her as like the protagonist, even though you know she's fucked up.
I got a pitch for you. You make it a comedy, and every time Rebecca De Mornay does something to gaslight Talia Shire, Ernie Hudson's character somehow inexplicably undoes it so that she can never get her gaslighting complete.
I don't hate that either. That's not bad.
I don't know, man. Like, this movie really sucks. It was really, really boring. And again, I think that the premise is good. And I, you know, without being able to cite examples, I swear I've seen this plot in other movies. Or at least heard about it, but
it's really the progenitor of every like Lifetime movie that everybody made fun of.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, this movie sucks. It's terrible. Don't watch it. What do we want? What do we got?
It's Sean's pick.
Oh boy.
So, just so you know, because of the format, we now have the opportunity, and I've colluded with TJ on this, and Alex not here to stop it. To do the funniest thing ever. So TJ, I think we can announce the next two picks.
No. So
I'm going to go with Julianne Moore, who stars with Wallace Shawn in a movie called Vanya on 42nd Street.
Yes.
Which is about a play to be followed by
My Dinner with Andre.
Boom.
Okay.
Starring Wallace Shawn.
I thought you guys were going to go Penitentiary. I thought you guys were going to go do.
We've already.
You're going to make us watch somehow. I know, but I thought you were going to either
the
make
alternate
us watch
choice was
to
a
the stars again.
Was a Todd Haynes movie called Safe, which looks really interesting. But like, when would we ever have gotten to My Dinner with Andre? And we have referenced that movie between just the movie itself and The Simpsons for 7 years.
So what is the movie we're watching next week again?
Vanya on 42nd Street. Vanya.
And this is a Julian Moore movie.
David Mamet's adaptation of Anton Chekhov's play Uncle Vanya. So I'm sure Alex's not going to be involved for the next 2 weeks.
Strap in.
So wait. So we're going. So let me make sure I got the path right. We're doing Julian Moore to Vanya on 42nd Street.
Yes. Correct.
And then we are doing Sean.
Yeah, with My Dinner with Andre.
And that's EJ's pick.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't even know who else is in My Dinner with Andre, so it might get real weird for a couple weeks till we struggle back to the mainstream somehow.
It's gonna be Alex's pick. You're putting the new format to its limits. You're really pushing it. You're
pushing it to its breaking point.
Yeah.
Because the cast is four people.
Yup.
Oh shit. Well, are we still doing birthday picks? Because my birthday. Oh, it is my pick, so never mind. Yeah. I would pick that anyway.
Hold on.
TJ, I will give up my birthday pick to you for going along with this.
Oh, I'm going to go with it. I love it. I love it. I think it's great.
No, check this out. We got options.
Okay.
One of four people in My Dinner with Andre is in Demolition Man.
We already did.
We've done Demolition Man.
Oh, no. Okay. We try again.
I mean, that act, whoever you're picking has got to be in other fucking movies.
He's in three movies. He's in Demolition Man. He's in 1994's The Shadow and 1988's The Last Temptation of Christ.
Ooh. I like both of those movies.
All right. So he's in other things.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit, you old hag.
Wow. All right. It's going to be a fun couple of weeks.
All right.
All right, everybody. I have to go eat. It's very late. All right.
Dinner with TJ.
Dinner with TJ. All right. Bye, guys. Bye.
Good night.